Available now from Graphic Audio.
In those days, there were heroes and villains, and darkness walked the earth. There were dragons to be slain, captured princesses to be saved, and mighty deeds to be accomplished by knights in shining armor.
Go forth and slay a dragon, my son.
Sounds so easy when you say it. Sounds even easier when those bloody minstrels sing about it.
Robert.
We're being watched, right?
Right.
What do you want from me?
I'm looking for a dragon.
To start with, you've got to pass clean through the Darkwood and out the other side. And there's damn few have done that and lived to tell it. Deep in the dark woods, something is stirring. Something awful!
I can take care of myself.
Hideous monster! I, Prince Rupert of the Forest Kingdom, do hereby challenge ye! Come forth and fight!
You're a prince, you said?
Yes.
Do you, by any chance, rescue princesses? I've got one here, and she's driving me crazy.
You're holding a princess captive?
Shh! Keep your voice down. She'll hear you. I'm not holding her captive. I'll be glad to see the back of her.
What's wrong with her?
Dragon!
That's what's wrong with her.
Hello, Prince...
Oh, my hero! You've come to rescue me!
Well, that's partly...
I knew you'd come!
Well, yes, glad to be of service.
Now get on with it.
Get on with what?
With killing the dragon, of course. That's what you're here for, isn't it?
Ah, well, the dragon and I have talked it over, and I'm going to take him back to my castle alive. And you too, of course. Princess Julia, you have two choices. Come back to my castle with me and the dragon, or stay here on your own.
You can't leave me here.
Watch me.
You're the worst prince ever.
Well, I see you've already got something in common with my father.
Prince Rupert? Princess Julia? Approach the throne.
Rupert, can't you do anything right?
Not much. Sorry I couldn't oblige you by getting killed during the quest.
Your Majesty, we do have a serious problem to discuss. Time is running out, Your Majesty. We've already lost three of the outlying villages to the demons, and every day more of the forest falls under the shadow of the Long Night. Demons run ahead of the Darkwood, slaughtering all in their path. We must make a stand against the darkness, while we still can.
Once in a blue moon, magic is loosed in the world. Wild magic, to create or destroy, strong enough to reshape reality itself on the night the blue moon is full. We have 7 months until that night. 7 months in which to find an answer to the darkness. If we fail, the Darkwood will spread over all that is. Civilization will fall. The Long Night will have no ending, and the world will belong to the demons. Prince Rupert, you must journey to the Dark Tower and there summon the High Warlock.
And the High Warlock's our only hope against the Darkwood?
Looks like it.
Then we're in deep trouble.
It's a hard, bloody journey to the Dark Tower, my friends. And you'll be facing the worst odds of your career. Most of you won't be coming back. If we make it, they'll sing songs about us forever.
Everybody, run! Now!
Rupert, what in the world did... We're not going to make it outside, sire. We have to stand and fight.
It'll kill us!
If you've a better idea, I'm open to suggestions.
Even as we speak, my champion and my younger son, Prince Rupert, are on their way to summon the High Warlock, that he may return to the forest land and set his sorceries against the darkness.
You'd bring him back? After what he did?
Desperate situations call for desperate remedies. I have therefore decided also to reopen the old armory and draw the katana from its scabbard.
The sword of compulsion has been forbidden to your majesty's line for over 4 centuries.
The situation has changed since then.
A king rules by the consent of his people. Not because he has a magic sword that compels their obedience. Do you think the barons will stand idly by while you employ such power?
Many tales are told of that time. Tales of steadfast bravery and daring do.
Unicorn, you'd better find a tree to hide behind and stay clear of the fight. I don't want you getting hurt.
Oh, I'm way ahead of you, Rupert!
Don't just stand there. Get him, lads. He's got a sword, boss.
A big sword.
And look at those scars on his face. And there was all that dried blood on his armor. He must have slaughtered hundreds of people.
Stop messing about and kill the traveler.
You want him dead, you kill him.
This is not one of those tales.
At least get his horse.
Horse! I'm a unicorn!
Horse, unicorn, what's the difference?
I'll be afraid later when there's time. I'll line up the crepes for me, and I'll skewer the lot of them. I'll show them a shish kebab they won't forget in a hurry.
Did you really think you could threaten me in my own court and get away with it? You're a fool, Sir Bedivere, and I do not suffer fools gladly. Bow your head to me or lose it.
You dare laugh? We're running out of time. There's a blue moon rising.
The dark will not take me this night!
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Blue Moon Rising, Part 1.
And now, our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond by William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Thomas Penny. With performances by Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Tim Getman, Casey Platt, Tom Simpson, Ken Jackson, Mort Shelby, Chris Rowan, Brian Patton, and Jonathan Watkins. Blood Bond number 13, The Deadly Road to Yuma.
I'm thirsty.
When are you not?
No, really, Sam. My whistle could sure use a wetting.
I repeat.
We're stopping up there in that town.
Of course we are. Do you think we could try to stay out of trouble this time?
We always try to stay out of trouble. At least I do.
Sam just rolled his eyes, shook his head, and hitched his horse forward, starting down the long, gentle slope toward the flat where the settlement was located. They had crossed the border between New Mexico Territory and Arizona Territory not long before, following the San Francisco River as it twisted through this bleak, rugged country. The Gila Mountains loomed to their right, the Palonchilos to the left. The settlement they were approaching was the first one Matt and Sam had come to in several days. It had been a long, relatively uneventful ride from Sweet Apple, Texas. The Blood Brothers were in no hurry to get anywhere because they didn't have anywhere to be. They were just drifting, seeing what was on the other side of every hill they came to, the same way they had spent most of the past several years.
What do you reckon this place is called?
I have no idea. I don't think we've ever been through here before.
I couldn't remember. We've been so many places.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And in most of them, they were glad to see us leave.
Hey, that's not our fault.
Didn't say it was.
This was ranching country. It wasn't good for much of anything else. And the settlement appeared to be a typical cow town, with a wide, dusty main street that stretched for several blocks. Most of the residences, a mixture of adobe and frame houses, were on the cross streets. A small, whitewashed church with a steeple sat at the far end of the main street, just beyond a wooden bridge that crossed the San Francisco, where it looped around the settlement. At the nearer end was a building that was probably a school. That put this place ahead of some frontier towns that had neither of those harbingers of civilization. In between were businesses, including a livery stable and a blacksmith shop, barber shop and bathhouse, a couple of mercantiles, and a half a dozen saloons. Another sure sign that this was a cow town. Cowboys had to have plenty of places to blow off steam when they collected their 40 a month and found. A few wagons were parked in front of the general stores, and a couple of men on horseback moseyed along the street. Pedestrians made their way here and there, including several women in long dresses and sunbonnets. A big yellow dog dozed in the middle of the street.
Peaceful-looking town.
Yeah, mighty peaceful.
How long do you reckon it'll stay that way?
Now, Sam, why do you have to be such a pessimist? Maybe nothing bad'll happen while we're here. Maybe it'll be a plumb dull the whole time.
I went to college, you know.
Yeah, I seem to remember hearing something about that. Like every time you try to convince me that I'm wrong and you're right.
It's just that I study history, and there's an old saying about how those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
And what do you mean by that? I'm just a poor, uneducated cowboy, Sam. You're gonna have to explain things to me.
I'm saying that just because someone annoys you, there's no reason to start a brawl or a gunfight.
You're saying that I'm touchy? That I lose my temper too easy?
If the Stetson fits.
What's this got to do with my hat?
Never mind. Let's just have a drink or two, stock up on supplies, and sleep in real beds for a change.
For a redskin, you sure do lack what you call your creature comforts. You must have got spoiled back there in that university in the East.
Yes, well, I'd say something insulting about you being a white man, but I can't think of anything right now.
Sam Two Wolves struck speechless. Lordy, I never thought I'd live to see the day.
Just remember what I said about trouble.
Sam turned his head to nod politely to several ladies who were going into one of the mercantiles, but they didn't smile or return his nod. In fact, they hustled on into the store as if trying to avoid looking at him. A man driving a wagon that they met refused to meet their eyes too, Sam noted. The fellow whipped his team up into a trot instead as he rolled on past them. A frown creased Sam's forehead under the broad brim of his hat, but he didn't mention the odd behavior of the townspeople to Matt, who seemed not to have noticed it. They reined their horses to a stop in front of a false-fronted building with a gilt-lettered sign on its awning, proclaiming it to be the Ten Grand Saloon. A stocky, bearded old-timer in bib overalls and a plug hat was sitting in a chair on the saloon porch to the right of the Batwings, whittling.
Howdy, boys. New in town?
That's right. What's the settlement called, if you don't mind my asking?
Don't mind in the least. This here's Arrowhead, Territory, Arizona.
Friendly place, is it?
Oh, shoot, yeah. We're friendly as can be around here.
I noticed that the folks we rode past didn't seem to want to look at us. Like, maybe they didn't like strangers.
No, I wouldn't say that. We get strangers passing through here pretty often. Like to think we make them welcome.
If there's really cold beer and friendly hostesses inside, I reckon I'll feel welcome, all right.
Go on in.
What are you carving there?
Well, I don't know. A snake, maybe?
Both of them froze as they entered the saloon. Men with shotguns had been concealed on both sides of the entrance, and now those greeners were pointed at the Blood Brothers.
Don't move, you sons of bitches!
A dozen other men scattered around the room raised revolvers and pointed them at Matt and Sam.
You try anything funny, we'll blow your damn heads off.
Oh, yeah. Real friendly town, all right.
I believe that you gentlemen are making a mistake.
Shut your mouth, Breed. Get your hands up. We know exactly what we're doing here.
Pointing guns at two men who don't want any trouble?
You don't expect us to believe that, do you? We know damn good and well that you're scouts for that bastard Shade.
Shade? Mister, the only shade I know is the shade under a tree. which would feel pretty good right now, come to think of it.
They want a tree, let's give them a tree. Let's take them out and string them up.
Matt and Sam exchanged worried glances.
Listen to me. We don't know anybody named Shade. We're not scouting for anyone, and we're not looking for trouble.
We're peaceable men.
Oh, yeah? Prove you ain't part of Shade's gang.
It's very difficult to prove a negative assumption.
You got my word on it, and that's proof enough.
Why should we believe you ain't lying?
Because I'm Matt Bodine, and I don't take kindly to being called a liar.
The name of Matt Bodine was well known across the frontier, from the Mississippi to the Pacific, from the Rio Grande to the Milk River.
They say the Bodine travels with an engine. This fella looks par redskin anyway.
My name is Sam August Webster Two Wolves.
Yeah, Two Wolves, that was it. That's the name of Bodine's sidekick.
Can we put our hands down now? You'll take my word for it that we're not working for the hombre Shade, whoever he is?
Joshua Shade is a pure dehydrophobia skunk.
The old man had put away his whittling knife.
Put them guns down, boys. Now that I've heard these young fellas' names, I recollect seeing pictures of them in the rotogravures. They're Bodine and Two Wolves, all right.
Well, I'm glad somebody around here has sense enough to believe us.
Oh, I got more sense than you'd think to look at me.
The old-timer lifted one corner of the bib front of his overalls that had come unbuttoned and fallen down. Pinned underneath it was a sheriff's badge.
I've also got a responsibility to protect this town. I'm the law hereabouts. Name is Cyrus Flagg.
We're pleased to meet you, Sheriff Flagg.
The lawman motioned to the other men in the saloon.
Go on about your drinking and gambling and whoring. I'm going to buy these two boys a drink.
We'd be much obliged for that.
As well as for interceding on our behalf.
Figured it was the least I could do, seeing as how it was me who put these fellas up to throwing down on you in the first place.
And why was it exactly you did that, Sheriff?
Let's have a sit down and I'll tell you all about it.
A moment later, a pretty blonde in a low-cut, spangled dress came over carrying a tray with three foaming mugs on it. The young woman smiled and bent over as she placed the tray in the center of the table, providing a good view of her creamy breasts in the provocative outfit.
Yeah, they're pretty as a couple of speckled pups, Amelia. Maybe later on one of these boys would like to take a closer look at them. Right now, though, beer's all we need.
You're a spoiled sport, Sheriff.
Yeah, that's what folks tell me all the time. Now, shoot. Gals just don't understand that there's a time and a place for everything. A fella ain't all that interested in romance when he's just had a pair of greeners and a half dozen six guns pointed at him.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
You were going to tell us about Joshua Shade and about why you set the trap for us.
I wouldn't exactly call it a trap. I just believe in taking precautions. Especially when a lobo like Shade is roaming around the countryside with a whole band of gun wolves tagging after him.
I take it that Joshua Shade is an outlaw.
You've heard of him, then?
Not before we rode in here today.
But we've been over in Texas for a spell. They have their own bad men over there.
An abundance of them.
None as bad as Shade, I reckon. And I'd bet my last dollar on that. Shade's a plum devil. He's been raising hell all up and down the eastern half of the territory for months now.
Have you had trouble with him here?
Not so far, and I'd just as soon keep it that way. But we heard that him and his gang were spotted between here and Springerville a few days ago. So we know he's in these parts. When I spotted you fellas riding down the hill, I thought you might be scouts for the gang. So I passed the word for everybody to get off the street without being too obvious about it. And told the fellas in here to be ready and get the drop on you.
Well, it worked. We weren't expecting trouble, so we walked right into it. Is that the way Shade operates? Sending men ahead to scout out the towns he raids, I mean?
Yep. A couple of strangers ride in, take a look around town, have a drink maybe, then ride back out and tell Shade where the sheriff's office is and the bank and anything else he needs to know. Then, a day later, Shade and his bunch come roaring in with all guns a-blazing and take over the town. They kill the local star packer and anybody else who tries to stand up to them, mistreat the women folk, load up all the loot they can get their filthy hands on, and ride out. Sometimes they leave the town burning behind them.
Sounds like a bad bunch, all right. But we've handled men like this before. I say, at least 12 times or so.
Not bad. Don't even begin to describe them. But maybe the worst part of it is, Shade used to be a man of God.
A preacher?
That's right. Had to call him and preach for a while before he turned bad. In fact, I hear tell that when his gang is terrorizing the town, he still claims to be doing the Lord's work. Says he has to smite folks and take everything they own so they'll stop worrying about the things of this world and start worrying about the next.
And while he's saying that, he's allowing his men to rape, kill, and loot.
Yep. Hell of a note, ain't it?
I can see why you say the hombre's loco. But you can take my word for it when I tell you that Sam and I don't have anything to do with him.
Oh, I know that now. I've heard plenty about you two young fellas, but I never heard anybody say that Bodine and Two Wolves are owl hoots. These beers are on me, boys. Enjoy your stay in Arrowhead.
We're obliged.
Yeah, my office is down the street. Stop by and visit for a spell anytime, if you're mind to.
We'll do that.
I was afraid he was going to ask us to sign on as deputies.
Yeah, so was I. And I've had enough of wearing a badge for a while. That stint as unofficial deputies in Sweet Apple was plenty to suit me.
I agree. Don't look now, but Amelia's coming back.
The blonde was headed toward their table.
I always enjoy the company of an attractive young woman.
Amelia moved right past him, though, to stand next to Sam and rest a hand on his buckskin-clad shoulder.
Can I get you anything else, Mr. Two Wolves?
Sam looked a little flustered, and Matt didn't know whether to be annoyed or bust out laughing. He thought that Amelia was interested in him, but here she was, making a play for Sam instead.
How about it, Sam? See anything you like?
The narrow, twisting canyon in the Gila Mountains was choked with brush for much of its length, brush that could claw a man bloody if he wasn't careful. Nobody would ride up here unless they had a good reason to. Ed Callahan had believed that he had a good reason, the best reason of all. Gold. He had a nose for the stuff, or so he had always told himself, even though he'd never found very much of it in the 20 years he'd spent as a prospector and desert rat. The hardships of those years had honed him down to little more than skin and bones. His cheeks were hollow, and his eyes were sunk deep in pits of gristle. One of those eyes didn't see too good anymore. Everything he saw through it looked filmy, like it had one of those thin scarves over it, like the dancing gals in the big cities used to hide and reveal their fleshy charms at the same time. But Ed could still see well enough to know that he was in a whole heap of trouble. He swallowed hard as he stared down the barrel of the gun that was no more than 4 inches from the tip of his nose.
What are you doing up here, old man?
The rough-looking hombre had just stepped out of the brush and pointed the gun at Ed.
You some sort of damn spy?
No, sir. I ain't no spy. I'm just doing a little prospecting. You can see for yourself. Just take a look at my outfit.
Yeah, that looks like the sort of shit a prospector'd have, all right. I never heard of anybody finding gold in these mountains, though.
I'm gonna be the first. Got me a hunch there's a fine vein up here just a-waiting for me to find it.
Yeah, well, that's too damn bad. You found more than you bargained for, old man. Come on, you're going with me.
Where are we going?
Never you mind. You'll see in a minute.
And so he did, as they rounded a bend and Ed saw that the canyon widened out a little. There was a spring flowing out of the rocks on one side, and near it a crude corral made of ropes and poles cut from saplings. Tents were pitched here and there, and bedrolls were also spread out in the open. The men camping here weren't Apaches, Ed saw as he looked around, although a couple of them appeared to be Mexicans. The rest were white, and every bit as ugly and rough-looking as the gent who'd brought him here at gunpoint. The man who pushed aside the entrance flap on one of the tents and came out into the fading late afternoon light didn't look like an outlaw, though. He wore a long black coat and a white shirt and a string tie. He was clean-shaven, with long, thick brown hair and a slightly lantern-jawed face. He smiled as he strode toward Ed.
Welcome, brother. What brings you here to our humble but temporary home?
Answer the Reverend.
I'm prospecting for gold. Didn't mean to intrude.
Nonsense. One of my fellow strugglers in this world could never intrude. We're glad to have you.
Obliged for the hospitality. Your name's Ed Callahan.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Brother Ed. I'm Joshua Shade.
Ed had heard of Joshua Shade. Everybody in this part of the territory had heard of the crazy owl hoot leader. Hell, probably everybody in the whole territory had heard of him. He and his men had been on a killing spree for months.
I see you've heard of me, Brother Ed.
No, sorry, Mr. Shade. I never heard nothing about you.
Reverend Shade.
Reverend Shade. But I still don't know who you are.
Are you a God-fearing man, Brother Ed?
Yeah, I like to think I am.
Then you know that by lying, you're breaking one of the Lord's commandments.
I ain't lying, I...
Don't make your sin any worse by denying it, brother.
I'm sorry.
Don't you worry. The Lord will forgive you and welcome you into His house. He has many mansions in heaven for all of us, you know?
Yeah, I heard a preacher say that once.
And today, you'll know the truth of it for yourself.
Today?
Unless you're lying again, in which case I'm sure the devil will have a warm welcome for you.
Shade looked at the man standing behind Ed and nodded.
Wait! Oh, God, wait!
Shade raised a hand, and the man behind Ed paused in whatever he'd been about to do.
Why should we wait in carrying out the Lord's judgment, Brother Ed?
If you let me live, I can help you.
What can you possibly do for us, brother?
I remember hearing how you like to send a man into town before you...
Before we deliver the word of the Lord unto them?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. But folks know that about you now. You see, they figured it out. There's a settlement not far from here. But if you send some of your men there, folks will be suspicious of them. Folks watch every stranger now mighty close.
Go on.
I can do it for you. They know me there. They think I'm just a harmless old coot. And up to now, it's all I've been, I reckon. But now, I can help you, Reverend. I can help you do the Lord's work.
I've always said that the Lord provides a solution to every problem. If only we open our hearts and our eyes and we are prepared to see it. And now, He has sent you to us, Brother Ed. Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
What's the name of this settlement you mentioned, Brother Ed?
It's called Arrowhead.
Arrowhead. Named after a weapon of the heathen redskins. It sounds to me as if the people there really need a visit from the messenger of the Lord.
Amelia was persistent, and Sam Two Wolves was as human as the next fella. By evening, she had worn down his resistance and talked him into taking her back to one of the little rooms behind the $10,000. That left Matt to take care of putting their horses up at the livery stable and renting a couple of rooms for them at the local hotel, which was one of only two-story buildings in town, the other being the bank, which was built solidly out of red brick. Matt didn't mind tending to those chores. Sam would have done the same if the situation had been reversed. In fact, he had done the same many times when it was reversed, which it usually was. When he was finished with that, he wandered back to the $10,000. No sign of Sam and Amelia in the bar room, so he figured they were still occupied out back. Matt went over to the bar and nodded to the portly bartender, Archie Cochran, whose acquaintance he and Sam had made during the afternoon.
Give me a beer, Archie.
There you go, Mr. Bodine.
See, Sam's not back yet.
Amelia's a mighty inventive gal when she wants to be. She can come up with all sorts of pleasant ways for a gent to pass some time.
I bet. What's the best place around here to get something to eat?
Got a jar of pickled eggs down at the end of the bar.
Yeah, well, I was thinking of something a little more substantial. Like a steak, maybe.
Try Hernando's right down the street.
Mexican place?
Hernando's a Mex, but he cooks American. Good, too. You gotta watch him, though, because every now and then he'll slip in some chili pepper. Can't take them myself. They make me feel like I'm on fire inside.
I like spicy food. Well, I'll give it a try when Sam gets back.
He'll probably have worked up an appetite by then, that's for sure.
Matt just smiled and shook his head. From the corner of his eye, he saw a man push the bat wings aside and enter the saloon. He was a scarecrow of a man, scrawny and dressed in ragged, dirty clothes and a shapeless old felt hat. When he came up to the bar, Matt got a look at his face and saw that one eye had some sort of film over it. He felt a twinge of pity for the old man.
What'll it be, Ed?
Can I have a beer?
You got any money?
I do.
I got enough, see?
All right, that'll buy you a beer. One beer. Haven't seen you around for a while.
I've been busy. You're looking for gold, you know.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't look like you've hit a bonanza yet.
Oh, you never know. You never know.
Ed glanced over at Matt and nodded.
Howdy.
Howdy yourself, old-timer.
Anything interesting going on here in town, Archie?
Not much. We had a little excitement earlier this afternoon when Matt there and his partner rode into town. Cyrus Flagg saw him coming and got worried they might be part of Joshua Shade's gang scouting the town for a bunch of owl hoots. Turned out they weren't, though.
Is that so? Sheriff's worried about Shade, is he?
Wouldn't you be? After all the hell those varmints have raised, anybody with sense will be worried. That's why Cyrus says we gotta take precautions.
What sort of precautions?
Oh, you know, like watching out for strangers and posting lookouts.
Yeah, lookouts?
Yeah, he decided on that a little while ago after Matt and Sam rode in. Figured it might be a good idea to post some fellas on the roof of the hotel and the bank so they can keep a watch around town all the time. That way we'll spot anybody who's headed this direction.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea, all right. Already got guards up there, does he?
You bet. One man on the top of the bank, one on the hotel. Ain't nobody gonna sneak up on us now.
Well, knowing that'll make me sleep better at night while I'm in town.
Yeah, me too. You better be careful roaming around the countryside like you do, Ed. You might run into that bad bunch.
I sure wouldn't want to do that. I figure if I ever saw that Joshua Shade, I'd plumb die of fright right then and there.
Matt had paid just enough attention to follow the conversation between the bartender and the old prospector, although he had been somewhat interested in the talk about posting lookouts on the bank and the hotel. That sounded like a good idea to him, too, although it didn't matter all that much to him, since he and Sam would probably only be in Arrowhead for one night. At that moment, Sam and Amelia came in through a door in the rear of the barroom. Sam looked vaguely embarrassed, but happy, and Amelia had a big smile on her face. Matt grinned and lifted his mug of beer in a salute to them. Sam said something to Amelia, who came up on her toes to give him a peck on the cheek. Then he walked over to join Matt at the bar.
Ready to get something to eat?
Yeah, I am. Fact of the matter is, I'm pretty hungry.
What'd I tell you?
What's he talking about?
Never mind. We're going to Hernando's. Place with the best steaks in town.
Sounds good. Lead me to it.
Hernando's turned out to be a narrow, hole-in-the-wall sort of place, but the smells that filled the air had the Blood Brothers licking their lips as soon as they went in. Hernando was a little fella with a lush, luxuriant mustache that curled up on the ends, and he greeted them with a big smile. There were only three tables in the cafe, and two of them were occupied, so Matt and Sam grabbed the empty one while they had a chance and ordered steaks with all the trimmings. When Hernando brought the food, they found that it was as good as Archie had said it would be. Matt saw what the bartender meant about the spices, though. The steaks had a definite kick to them. Once they were finished with the meal, they paid Hernando and promised that they would be back before they left Arrowhead. Matt and Sam strolled back toward the hotel.
You want to stop at the saloon again for another drink?
Actually, I think I'd rather turn in. We rode quite a ways today.
Yeah, I reckon you'd be tired all right after that long, ride.
Damn it, Matt.
Take it easy. I'm just joshing you.
Yeah, I know.
And it could be that I'm just jealous. Amelia's a mighty pretty girl, after all, especially for a soiled dove.
She's just doing that for now, until she makes enough money to go to San Francisco.
Oh, I see.
You don't believe her?
I didn't say that.
Yeah, she was probably just telling me the same thing she tells everybody who goes with her. But maybe it was true. You never know.
The man on the top of the hotel was named Charlie Cornwell, and he was having one hell of a time staying awake. He worked as a hostler at the livery stable and also as a part-time deputy for Sheriff Flagg, and he had put in almost a full day's work before the sheriff came by the stable and told him to go home and take a nap because he was going to hold down the night shift on lookout duty at the hotel. Cyrus hadn't given Charlie any choice in the matter, and since Charlie needed the money from the deputy job to go along with what he earned at the stable, he said sure. He had long since given up on the idea of ever making enough so that his wife would actually be happy, but he didn't see any reason to make things worse than they already were. The roof was flat, with a little wall about 2 feet high that ran all around it. Charlie figured that if he could just sit down with his back propped against the wall, he could catch some quick shut-eye. But Sheriff Flagg had warned him specifically about that very thing. Charlie looked north and east. Down at the bank, on the other side of the street, at the far end of the next block, Harlan Eggleston was watching to the south and west. Although Charlie didn't know what the hell Cyrus Flagg expected them to be able to see in the dark like this. A little moonlight spilled over the landscape, but not much. Anyway, as far as Charlie could remember, Joshua Shade and his gang always attacked a town in broad daylight. They weren't going to be showing up here tonight. Still, he would do what Cyrus told him. He always did. The ladder that leaned against the back wall of the hotel rattled a little as someone started up it. Charlie turned toward it, frowning a little. The sheriff had told him that he'd be up here until 4 o'clock in the morning when somebody would come to relieve him. It wasn't anywhere close to four yet.
Hey, Charlie, you up there?
Carrying the Winchester slanted across his chest, Charlie walked over to the ladder and looked down. All he could see in the moonlight was a hat rising toward him as its wearer climbed the rungs.
Yeah, I'm here. Who's that?
Sheriff sent me to take over for you.
I'm mighty glad to hear that. I'm so sleepy I can barely keep my eyes open. Cyrus said we'd have to stay alert. Here, let me give you a hand.
Charlie stepped closer as the man seemed to struggle a little getting over the wall around the edge of the roof. Charlie's hand was out to help. But then the man looked up, revealing his face under the broad-brimmed hat. And Charlie realized he'd never seen the hombre before. Charlie dropped the Winchester and reached for his throat with both hands. Blood cascaded over them. He felt it pumping out through the huge slash his fingers found. Ed Callahan had thought about going the other way when he left Arrowhead with his mule earlier that night, instead of returning to the foothills of the Gilas north of town. But Joshua Shade had warned him about that, putting an arm around Ed's shoulders.
Now, you don't want to be led astray by any foolish ideas, Brother Ed, like not coming back to tell me what you find out. 'Cause if you do that, I'll have to come looking for you, and you know the Lord will lead me right to you.
Ed didn't doubt it for a second. Shade was downright spooky, the way he seemed able to peer right through a man, like he knew everything the other fellow was thinking and feeling.
So you find out anything you can that you think will help us, and you come right back here and tell me. Will you do that?
I sure will, Reverend. I'll be back.
Ed kept his word. He had spent several hours hanging around Arrowhead, talking to folks. He found out about the guard Sheriff Flagg had posted on top of the bank in the hotel. He'd even seen Charlie Cornwell and Harlan Eggleston climbing up those buildings to take the night watch. Nobody seemed to notice when he left town and headed for the foothills. No one in Arrowhead had ever paid him much mind to start with, and this evening was no different. When he got back to the spot overlooking the town where he'd left Shade and the rest of the outlaws, he didn't see anybody. At first, he had thought that he was lost, that he'd come to the wrong place. Then, like phantoms, they had materialized out of the shadows, surrounding him and making his blood run cold. Joshua Shade stepped forward and rested both hands on Ed's shoulders.
Tell me, Brother Ed, what have you found out?
Ed spilled his guts, of course. What else was he going to do? Lie to this outlaw? This demon? Run the risk of having Joshua Shade pursuing him like a hound from Hades for the rest of his life?
Good work, my friend. The Lord will be pleased that you've provided so much assistance to his humble servants.
Well, what are you going to do now?
Bring God's message to Arrowhead, of course. Help the sinners to repent and put the things of this world aside. You should stay, Brother Ed. Stay and witness the fruits of your handiwork.
A couple of men rode off toward Arrowhead. After what seemed like forever to Ed, a light suddenly flared to life and moved back and forth three times. Somebody had lit a match and signaled with it. Mere seconds later, the same sort of signal was repeated from the other end of the settlement.
Excellent! The sentries have been taken care of. We'll be going now. Would you like to accompany us, Brother Ed? Or would you rather receive your reward now?
Reward? You didn't say nothing about no reward.
Now, you didn't think the Lord would allow your work to go unrewarded, did you?
If it's all right with you, Reverend, I'll take whatever you got for me and go on my way. I don't care how much it is, neither. I'll take whatever you want to give me.
Oh, it's not the money, brother. It's a heavenly reward.
Matt Bodine's eyes snapped open in the darkness. He didn't know what had awakened him, but he had a feeling it couldn't be anything good. His instincts wouldn't have roused him from slumber otherwise. He sat up in bed. A little moonlight filtered in around the curtain over the hotel room's single window. The window was open to let in some fresh air, and the curtain swayed in and out with the currents of the night breeze. In bare feet, wearing only the bottoms from a pair of long underwear, Matt padded over to the window and used the Colt's barrel to ease the curtain aside so that he could look out. His room was at the rear of the hotel, as was Sam's next door. The windows looked out on an alley. Nothing was moving in that alley, Matt saw, as he peered down from his window. That wasn't right. Matt snuck his head out the window. To his right, no more than a couple of feet away, a ladder leaned against the hotel. That would be the ladder used by the lookout Sheriff Cyrus Flagg had posted up there. Sam's window was on the other side of the ladder, and at that moment, Sam poked his head out too and looked toward his blood brother.
You hear something?
Matt nodded and gestured with the thumb of his free hand toward the roof. Sam brought his right hand into view, holding a six gun. He gestured with the barrel pointing upward. Matt nodded and swung a leg over the windowsill. His brain was working swiftly. Given the fact that something was going on up there on the roof, it made sense that what he had heard that woke him up was somebody climbing the ladder, since it was right outside his window. With the lithe agility he'd been blessed with since birth, Matt swung over to the ladder. He started climbing toward the roof. As he looked up, he saw a flare of light. Someone had just lit a match. He smelled the faint tang of brimstone from the lucifer. Matt smelled something else, too, a metallic, coppery scent that he recognized. Matt's head rose above the level of the short wall that ran around the roof. He saw a man standing several yards away with his back turned, holding a lit match over his head that he moved back and forth three times. Between Matt and the hombre with the match lay another man, face down in the middle of a dark, spreading pool. The dead man had to be the guard Sheriff Flagg had posted up here, which meant the killer, in all likelihood, was one of Joshua Shade's men. In the back of Matt's brain, he realized that Shade must have managed to sneak some scouts into the settlement after all, or else he wouldn't have known about the guard on top of the hotel. That guess was confirmed a second later when, from the corner of his eye, he saw another match being waved back and forth at the far end of the next block, from the roof of the bank. He didn't stop to think about that consciously, though. Instead, he went into action, swarming up and over the wall and onto the roof. Matt lunged past the dead man at the outlaw who had just sent that signal with the match. The Colt in Matt's hand smashed down on the man's head.
What the hell happened here?
This fella just killed a guard Sheriff Flagg posted up here. He was using a match to signal somebody in the hills when I walloped him.
Shade.
Yeah, that's what I figured too. Another of his men sent a signal from the top of the bank. They were letting Shade know that the lookouts were taken care of.
That means Shade is about to attack the town.
That's right. You go warn the folks.
What are you going to do?
See if I can catch up with the hombre who sent the signal from the bank. He might use this gent's belt to lash his hands behind his back. Wouldn't want him coming to and joining the party later on.
How come I get that job?
Because I'm closer to the ground.
Then he started down the rungs as fast as he could. For a second, he had considered stopping at his room to get his trousers, rather than running around Arrowhead in his long underwear, but he decided not to take the time to do that. Matt sprinted toward Main Street. When he reached it, he turned to his right toward the bank. At the end of the block, he took a left-hand jog since the bank was on the opposite side of the street from the hotel. Nobody was on the street at this time of night, although lights still glowed from some of the saloons and a few horses were tied at the hitch rails. Matt darted into the alley behind the block of buildings where the bank was located. Matt could barely see the man in the shadows, but he recognized the movement as the man spun toward him. The man staggered against the wall, but he didn't drop his gun. Matt ran lightly toward the Mexican and bent to retrieve the fallen Colt. Matt had no doubt in his mind that at this very minute, Joshua Shade and his band of ruthless killers were sweeping toward Arrowhead like a plague of locusts. Sam knew that Matt was right about tying up the unconscious outlaw, so he pulled the man's belt off, jerked his arms behind his back, and lashed the wrists together with it. When he finished with that, he pulled the man's revolver from its holster and then hurried over to the ladder. Sam was worried about Matt, but he knew his blood brother could take care of himself.
Wake up! Wake up! Outlaws! Outlaws! Joshua Shade!
Men poured out of the saloons, abandoning their drinks and their poker games to run into the street and shout questions at each other. The hotel doors swung open behind Sam, and the proprietor hurried out with a shotgun in his hands. The man swung the Greener's barrels towards Sam.
Don't shoot! It's me, Sam Two Wolves.
What the hell's going on?
Joshua Shade and his gang are about to attack the town.
Sheriff Cyrus Flagg ran out of the sheriff's office in a nightshirt that flapped around his thick calves, testifying that he'd slept in the back room of the office. He had a Winchester in his hands. The men on the street had started to stream toward the hotel, so he joined them.
In the name of all that's holy and half that ain't, what's going on here, Two Wolves?
Your lookouts have been murdered, Sheriff.
Murdered?
Matt and I think that Joshua Shade is about to attack the town.
Well, what are we gonna do, Sheriff?
Spread out all over town. Bang on doors and tell folks to get ready if they ain't already. Make it quick, though, and then hunt some cover. It won't be long until Shade and his bunch are here, I reckon.
We'll give those owl hoots a lot hotter welcome than they're expecting.
More than 40 strong, the gang swarmed down out of the hills with Joshua Shade in the lead. He was bareheaded, and the wind whipped his longish hair around his lean face. Beside him rode his second in command, a heavily mustached outlaw named Willard Garth.
What about those shots we heard, Joshua? You think they know we're coming?
Oh, it doesn't matter, Brother Willard. The Lord has told me that tonight is the night we need to deliver his message to that sinful town up ahead. And that's exactly what we're going to do.
And clean out the bank while we're at it, eh, boss?
It takes money to do the Lord's work.
Sam was about to go looking for Matt when he spotted his blood brother running along the street toward the hotel.
I suppose you were responsible for those shots I heard a couple of minutes ago?
Who else?
What about the lookout on top of the bank?
Dead. Throat cut just like the other fella. Poor son of a bitch probably died before he even knew what was going on. Looks like you did a good job spreading the word.
It's not that hard to do with shots going off. Come on. It'll take Shade a few minutes to get here. We've got time to get dressed and get the rest of our guns.
Good idea. I feel half naked with only one Colt.
You are half naked. So am I.
What'd I tell you?
They hurried through the lobby, getting spare keys from the hotel owner as they did so, since the doors of their rooms were locked and the keys were inside with the rest of their gear. The proprietor was standing behind the desk, lining up shotgun shells on top of it.
If any of those owl hoots get in here, I'll give them a buckshot reception.
Well, nobody can say you're not hospitable.
A minute after he and Sam entered their rooms, they emerged into the hallway again, stamping their feet to settle them in their boots. The Blood Brothers were dressed now and had their hats on and their gun belts strapped around their waists. Each carried a fully loaded Winchester.
Hey, we'd better take the high ground while we can. You want the hotel or the bank?
Let's both take the hotel. If the gang was holed up in the hills, they'll reach this end of the town first. Might be a good idea to pull the ladder up once we're up there, too. We can always let it back down after the fight's over.
Yeah, assuming we're still alive.
I always assume that.
They went out the back door of the hotel this time. The ladder was still there in the alley, propped against the wall. Matt went up first as he reached the top of the ladder and swung a leg over onto the roof. Hoofbeats. A large group of riders was galloping toward Arrowhead, and the men weren't far off now.
Sounds like a big bunch.
Yeah.
Matt trotted over to the front of the building, looked down, and saw Sheriff Flagg in the street.
Better get inside, Sheriff! Here they come!
Flagg waved his Winchester in acknowledgement of the warning and hurried toward the sheriff's office. Matt and Sam stood at the edge of the roof, peering northward into the darkness.
You see him?
Not yet.
Matt looked down again. The street was pretty much clear now, the townspeople having scattered to hunt cover.
Let him come.
Matt and Sam moved to the corners of the hotel fronting the street and knelt behind the little wall. It wouldn't provide much cover, but it was better than nothing. Torches suddenly flared to life in the hands of some of the approaching riders, and from the intensity of the flames, Matt and Sam knew that the torches had been soaked in pitch.
Drop those men with the torches. They're going to try to set the town on fire.
As the outlaws reached the end of Main Street and began to sweep into the settlement, the Blood Brothers opened fire. The raiders returned the fire. Matt and Sam were forced to duck as the bullets chewed at the wall. Then the outlaws raced on past the hotel as more gunfire began to erupt up and down the street. The town's defenders were shooting from the cover of the buildings, but they didn't seem to be doing much damage, Matt saw as he poked his head up again. A bareheaded man in a long black coat whirled his horse and galloped back to the spot where one of the torches had fallen. It was still burning, and scarcely slackening his mount's speed, the man bent down from the saddle, reached out with a long arm, and snatched the torch from the ground. He whirled it over his head and threw it at the window of a hardware store as he dashed past.
Damn!
Matt looked through the broken window and saw flames leaping up. The outlaws fought with the precision of a well-trained military unit, some of them staying together and sending volleys of lead ripping into the buildings they passed. Others split off from the main group.
Damn it! The way they spread out, we can't do enough from up here! We need to be down there!
I'll get the ladder.
No time for that!
Holding the Winchester slanted across his chest, Matt stepped up onto the wall and leaped down onto the roof that extended out over the hotel porch. The roof had a little slope to it, so he slid down to the edge and then rolled over it, catching hold with one hand to break his fall. He hung there for a second, one hand holding him up while the other lifted the rifle. Matt went to one knee when he landed. He stayed there and socketed the Winchester against his shoulder. Surging to his feet, Matt grabbed the Winchester's heated barrel with both hands and swung the weapon like a club as he leaped toward one of the mounted raiders. Matt tossed the broken rifle aside and palmed out both Colts. Sam had followed Matt's lead and was hanging from the end of the porch roof. Matt was across the street in front of the hardware store, which was still burning inside. When both Colts were empty, Matt jammed them back in their holsters and kicked the store's door open. He ran inside and began looking for something he could use to beat out the flames before they got too big. Sam crouched on the hotel porch and fired at the raiders as they galloped past until his revolver was empty. Then, instead of reloading, he ran into the hotel again and grabbed the shotgun the proprietor had dropped. An outlaw had apparently snuck through the back door. A number of shells were still lined up on the counter. The hotelman hadn't gotten a chance to use them. Sam snatched the shells and stuffed them into the pocket of his buckskin shirt. He dashed back out of the hotel. Bloody chaos ensued, filling the town. A score of gunfights were going on, scattered from one end of the street to the other. Only one building seemed to be on fire so far, which was a blessing, but the blaze could still spread. Sam felt the heat of a bullet against his cheek and swung around to see who had fired it, lifting the shotgun as he did so. Sam pulled two more shells from his pocket as he scrambled to his feet. He broke the shotgun, shucked the empties, crammed the fresh shells into the barrels.
The vengeance of the Lord will be upon you!
Sam whirled and saw another man on horseback charging toward him, the hatless, long-haired, black-suited hombre who had led the charge into the settlement. Sam raised the shotgun. At the last second, the rider hauled back hard on the reins and caused his mount to rear up on its hind legs. The horse took the blast. Yeah! Sam threw the greener at the man as hard as he could. The shotgun hit the outlaw in the arms and threw his aim off. Sam landed on top, and as he dug a knee into the man's belly, he sledged a left and a right to his face. The outlaw went limp, stunned by the powerful blows. Sam surged to his feet and spun toward the sound of more footsteps running toward him.
You all right?
Yeah. How about you?
Burned my hands a little using a blanket I found to slap out that fire, but other than that, I'm fine.
The shooting had started to die away, and as the Blood Brothers looked around, they saw that the raiders were fleeing, having encountered a lot fiercer resistance in Arrowhead than they must have been expecting. Several bodies were scattered around the street, so not all of the varmints had gotten away. The one sprawled senseless at Sam's feet certainly hadn't. Matt looked down at him.
Oh, You know who you got there?
Joshua Shade?
That'd be my guess. He's dressed like a preacher, and he sure had that crazy look about him when he was leading the charge into town.
Clouds of powder smoke still drifted through the street. Sheriff Cyrus Flagg emerged from one of them and ran up to Matt and Sam.
You boys all right? Son of a bitch! You know who that is?
Joshua Shade.
It sure is. You boys not only saved our town, you just captured the most notorious owl hoot in the whole territory.
Matt and Sam each took an arm and hauled Joshua Shade to his feet. They half-carried, half-dragged the outlaw down the street to the sheriff's office and jail. They wanted to make sure that Shade was locked up securely before they did anything else. Shade began to regain his senses as they entered the squat, solidly constructed stone building.
Unhand me, foul demons! How dare you lay hands on the Lord's servant!
Lobo Wolf is more the Lord's servant than you are, you crazy son of a bitch!
Servants of Satan!
Matt and Sam threw Shade onto the cot attached to the wall.
You can't lock me up! I've come to do God's work! Release me, you filthy heathen!
Shut up, or I'll toss a bucket of water through that window.
You can't silence the voice of the Lord! You foul abomination! All of you will burn in hell for your sins!
Maybe, but you'll be there before us.
Flagg turned to Matt and Sam.
I'm much obliged for your help, fellas. The whole town is. You've done enough already, capturing Shade like that. But you reckon you could help me take a look around town so I can see just how bad the damage really is?
Sure, Sheriff.
Yeah! Sinners! Unholy sinners!
The group went into the sheriff's office again.
Grab a couple of greeners. Liable to need them if any of those wounded owl hoots are still alive.
We can't just finish them off.
No, that ain't what I meant. Just in case they don't give us a choice, though.
Never hurts to be prepared.
Well armed again and ready for trouble, the three men left the sheriff's office.
Don't worry, Sheriff. One of these snakes was still alive, reached for his gun. But he won't trouble nobody no more.
Damn it, Kincaid. You better be telling the truth. I won't have anybody taking the law into their own hands in my town.
For the next 15 minutes, Matt, Sam, and Flagg made the rounds of the settlement. When they were done, the inventory of their findings included 5 dead outlaws, 5 dead citizens of Arrowhead, including the hotel proprietor, 8 more townies wounded, a heavily fire-damaged hardware store, and hundreds of bullet holes. Few of the buildings on Main Street had escaped without any damage. It would take folks a while to patch up everything that needed patching up. Even so, the town had fared much better than the other settlements that had been raided by Joshua Shade and his gang. The bank and the other businesses hadn't been looted, the women were safe, and the whole town hadn't been burned to the ground.
We were lucky, mighty lucky, that you fellas were here in town when Shade decided to hit us. He'd have taken us by surprise and gotten the upper hand, probably wiped the place out if not for the two of you.
We don't like owl hoots, so we're glad to help, Sheriff.
What will you do with Shade now?
I know what folks would like to do.
Drag him out of the jail and string him up to the nearest tree?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Well, can't blame him for feeling that way. A varmint as ornery as Shade has got it coming.
But that wouldn't be legal. He has to have a trial.
Oh, he'll have a trial, all right. I ain't gonna put up with any lynch law in my town. Folks are working themselves up into a bad state, though. They may not want to listen to reason.
Do you have any deputies?
Oh, a couple of part-timers. Arrowhead's a pretty peaceable place most of the time. Say, you fellas wouldn't consider...
We're not lawmen, Sheriff. We helped out a badge-toting friend of ours over in Texas a while back, but that was enough deputeeing to serve us for a long time.
And we were never actually sworn in over there. It was all unofficial.
Well, that'd be fine with me. All I need is somebody to make sure nothing happens to Shade before his trial.
How long do you reckon that'll be?
The mood the town's gonna be in, it better be as soon as possible. We got a justice of the peace here, but no judge who could preside over a trial like the one Shade's gonna have. I reckon I'll have to send word to Tucson to get a judge out here. Probably take a week, maybe a little less.
Which means you'll have to guard Shade for that long. And lynch mobs aren't the only danger. Once his men realize that he's in jail, they might decide to come back and get him.
Yeah, you're right. Wish I had a couple of good men to watch the jail.
I don't reckon we have much choice, do we?
Not really. All right, Sheriff. We'll give you a hand.
Unofficially.
Oh, I don't care about that. I'm just much obliged to you boys for your help.
And to tell you the truth, I sort of lean towards stringing Shade up myself.
You're not the only one. Looks like we've already got trouble.
Matt and Flag turned and saw the same thing Sam did. A large group of men heading toward the jail, carrying rifles and shotguns.
Looks like we're about to start earning our wages. Oh yeah, we're not getting paid for this, are we? We're risking our lives for no good murdering skunk just because it's the right thing to do.
Hell of a note, ain't it?
The man had almost reached the door of the sheriff's office when Flag pointed his rifle in the air.
What the hell, Sheriff?
Back away from there. That's my jail, by God, and nobody sets foot in there without my say-so.
There's a rumor you got Joshua Shade locked up in there, Cyrus. A couple of fellas saw you and those drifters dragging him into the jail.
Don't you worry about who I got locked up. That's the law's business. Now, I want you all to break it up and go on about your business. Except for a couple of good men who are willing to serve as lookouts on top of the bank and the hotel.
Well, that's where Harlan and Charlie were. And they wound up dead.
That's not gonna happen again.
How do you know that, Sheriff?
Because Shade's men know that we're ready for them now. They'll have more sense than to try to attack the town again tonight.
But they might some other time, because they know that Shade's a prisoner.
If we go ahead and hang him, they won't have any reason to come back here.
What about vengeance? If you lynch Shade, you'll just give his men even more reason to come back to Arrowhead.
I'm gonna send a rider to Tucson first thing in the morning. We'll have a judge out here in less than a week. So we can give Shade a proper trial, and then hang him.
You sure he's gonna hang?
He's gotta be found guilty first.
Hell, we got dozens of witnesses who saw him lead that charge into town, shooting all the way. He's been seen in other towns too, raiding and killing. No jury's gonna find him innocent. You know that. So go on home, unless you want to volunteer to take a shift on lookout duty.
Several men stepped forward, and Flag picked two of them to climb up on the hotel and the bank.
We gotta get poor Charlie and Harlan down from there, too. Maybe some of you boys could help out with that.
The local undertaker already had his wagon parked in the street, and he and a helper were loading up the bodies of the outlaws that had been left behind. The crowd in front of the jail began to disperse. Matt, Sam, and Flag watched them go.
This looks like you may not need our help after all.
Did a good job of talking some sense into their heads, Sheriff.
They listen to me for now. But once they get back in the saloons and take on a snoot full of Who-Hid John, they'll get mad again. They'll egg each other on until sooner or later they decide not to wait for the judge. Might not happen tonight, but sooner or later they'll make another try for Shade.
If they do, we'll be here to stop them.
But I'm gonna hate like hell to maybe have to shoot some honest folks just to protect a crazy polecat like Shade.
You and me both, Bodine. You and me both.